Here's the Carol Adams Show.
Hello there. This is Carol Adams coming to you by transcription and asking you to join me on this gay holiday for another session for and about women. I sincerely hope that the weekend has been as pleasant and relaxing for you as it has been for me. You know, I've made an amazing discovery. Men seem to be just as hungry for new and delicious food on holidays as they are on any other day of the week. In fact, I think they look a little more wistfully into the icebox and cupboards on their day off than they do other days. That's why I'm glad my family was prepared for the in-between-meal snacks that occurred so regularly. How about you? Did you plan on the extra eating that the men folks are doing? And another thing that I discovered, they seem to get hungriest just when you're right in the middle of preparing the meal. And to me, there's nothing so annoying than a crowded kitchen when there's work to be done. And don't they disappear fast when the meal is over and the cleaning up period arrives? Oh, well, there's a consolation when we remember that tomorrow we start on our regular schedule again, which brings us right back to the topic of food. Most of you will probably need a little relaxation from the holiday festivities, so I suggest you plan your menus around leftovers and easy-to-fix dishes. Which reminds me of a dish that I haven't talked about for a long time. It's pancakes. Here in America, we commonly think of pancakes as the main dish, but in many other nations, they appear as the favorite dessert. For example, the Swedish dessert pancakes are delicious, and Russian blintzes are awfully hard to equal. Probably the most famous is the delicate French version, Crepe Suzette. With characteristic imagination, they roll up a special, very thin pancake and top it with a fruit sauce. You may Americanize this same idea for your own delicious dessert pancakes. Just use your favorite pancake ready mix and add eggs, shortening, and extra milk. Dessert pancakes are usually thinner and richer than ordinary breakfast cakes, and for most desserts you will want pancakes that are quite small in size. Use about 2 tablespoons of batter, then bake and serve them with any of a variety of fruit sauces. For a summer special, make a tart red cherry sauce. Thicken and sweeten the sauce to your taste for a gaily colored topping over the tiny pancakes. And now that the peach season is here, your family will enjoy a peach sauce topping. Cook the peaches in a medium syrup and add a bit of lemon juice to bring out all of the delicate peach flavor. And by the way, this also keeps the peaches from darkening. A fresh orange sauce makes a year-round dessert topping and comes close to the French Suzette sauces. As a delicate garnish, sprinkle coconut on top of each pancake. The true French Crepe Suzette is rolled before serving. To do this, use about 1/3 cup of batter and roll the pancakes just as soon as they come off the griddle. For a wonderful hot weather dessert, roll pancakes around sweetened fresh raspberries or blackberries and sprinkle them with powdered sugar and top them with whipped cream. You'll find these fruit roll-ups especially good for a late evening dessert. Foreign dishes bring to mind the little pamphlet of United Nations dishes that's just been printed by the Red Cross chapter in Queens, Long Island. The idea owes its start to Red Cross nutrition classes attended by the wives of United Nations delegates. They came to the classes to learn American cooking methods, and then, as women from any country will do, they started comparing recipes. Understanding between nations may be helped by conferences or round of diplomats' table, but sit women from China down to a dinner of Czechoslovakian beef goulash or serve Latin American delegates a favorite Canadian rhubarb dessert, and the women put diplomatic methods to shame. Some of the recipes are too complicated to make good conversation, and some of them frankly have a doubtful appeal to the American palate, like a dish called crust cushioned flabbies. That's one of the Chinese recipes contributed by Mrs. Chai Lin Tan. The result is something like individual dough patties stuffed with ground pork, Chinese cabbage, and asparagus. It's a pretty far cry from the chop suey Americans usually attribute to the Chinese, but some of the other recipes in the pamphlet stand more chance of winning the popular vote. Mrs. Sylvia Campbell, wife of one of the Canadian delegation employees, has contributed her favorite recipe for rhubarb pie. First, she puts 3 cups of diced rhubarb in a baking dish and sprinkles 1/2 cup of brown sugar and 1 tablespoon of flour over the rhubarb. Then she mixes together the following ingredients: 1/2 cup of rolled oats, 1/2 cup of sifted flour, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of butter or other shortening, and 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder. This mixture is spread over the rhubarb and packed firmly. Then the dish is set in a moderate oven about 350 degrees to bake for 45 minutes. Mrs. Campbell says the recipe serves from 4 to 6. The Iranian recipe, which is called green beans and rice, actually sounds like a Near Eastern version of an Irish stew. You brown 1 pound of diced beef stew meat and 1 diced onion in fat. Then add 1 pound of green string beans and 1 can of tomato sauce, and allow the mixture to simmer for 5 minutes. The rice is washed and cooked in a separate pan. Then the Iranian recipe calls for slicing 1 medium-sized raw potato on the bottom of a 4-quart pan. The rice, the meat, and string beans are added, and then the pan is covered with a piece of cloth and then a lid. And they don't explain why they use both cloth and lid for a stew covering. But the pan is placed over a slow fire for 15 or 20 minutes, or until it's thoroughly steamed and the potatoes are cooked. The Iranian recipe serves from 6 to 8, too. To go on with the little round-the-world dinner party, the United Nations ladies have a suggestion for a good Swedish smorgasbord, or for a more simple Swedish appetizer. Unless you have a taste for anchovies and herrings and sardines, you'll probably want to skip over the Swedish recipes for a Latin American meat pie or some New Zealand sausage rolls. The sausage rolls are made by rolling out pastry in a long, narrow strip, putting the ground sausage down the center and pinching the pastry edges together over the top to form a roll. The roll can be cut in various sizes, depending on whether they're to be served for dinner or for a snack. They're baked in a moderately hot oven for 20 or 25 minutes. And those are a few of the results from a recipe exchanged by United Nations wives. And they may be a bit of a surprise on the family dinner table, but they're bound to get a menu planning out of a rut. You know, it's hard to believe, but the camping season is almost upon us. Any day now, the youngsters will be in training for the cabin sites with the Indian names, and with the children off to camp, you won't believe your ears that the house is so quiet. At least once, and often several times during the summer, it's part of the camp ritual for parents to visit their youngsters in camp. Although parents and offspring both look forward eagerly to this occasion, it's no secret that the results of a camp visit are frequently disastrous. Mothers go home hurt and angry because Junior obviously would rather hunt grasshoppers than tell his own mother what he's been doing all summer. And counselors are annoyed because for days contraband boxes of candy and cookies turn up in the bunks. You know, the children themselves are irritated because their parents keep asking them if they eat enough spinach. Many a camp director would like to put up a sign for Visitor's Day reading, "Kindly don't annoy the children." You know, actually, parents can make their visits a joy rather than a chore by abiding by camp regulations and by following a few common sense rules. Be happy, not hurt, if your child is too busy to pay a great deal of attention to you. That means that he's well adjusted and enjoying himself. Only the unhappy camper wraps himself around his mother and wails when she leaves. And don't ply your child with endless questions. He'll volunteer information he thinks is important, and if you think the camp is not properly run, take it up with the director. And above all, don't try to stuff the youngster with sweets. He'll only have a tummy ache after you leave. Hot days make short tempers, especially during the holiday, but unless you want to feel even hotter, you'll count to 10 and relax. Avoid worry, excitement, and arguments. That's one of the 10 rules for keeping cool put out by a Brooklyn dermatologist. Dr. Charles Pabst has been advising sweltering New Yorkers how to keep cool for 37 years. But he says a new generation has come up since he began, and young people seem to be unaware of the dangers of too much sun, too much heat, and too much exercise in hot weather. His number one rule for hot days is to avoid exertion and strenuous exercise. Second on the list is the advice to wear thin, loose clothing. A girdle, he says, is an abomination in hot weather because it prevents a large portion of the skin from performing its function of regulating the heat of the body. According to Dr. Pabst, 87% of the total amount of heat given off by the body is lost by means of the heat-regulating function of the skin. When tight, heavy clothes interfere with this, you're going to have some uncomfortable hours. Drinking plenty of liquids is good advice anytime, but even more important on hot days. Dr. Pabst advises 8 or more glasses of water daily, with a pinch of salt added to the water about 3 times a day. Another list of hot weather tips points out that too many ice liquids can cause harm. They can bring on digestive disorders, headaches, and other ailments, especially in children and older people. The hot weather tips listed by Dr. Pabst ought to make a nation of healthy and even-tempered individuals. Besides avoiding arguments, the doctor advises 8 hours sleep a night. Hot weather, he says, saps energy that should be replaced by plenty of sleep. An electric fan turned in your direction is fine during waking hours. It cools the body by increasing the loss of heat through the skin, but it should be aimed away from the body during the sleeping hours. The dangers of cold or stiffness is too great to sleep with a fan blowing directly on you. The old Chinese custom of letting cold water run on the wrist is a good temporary relief from heat. He also advises taking frequent cool baths, although you have to take a warm bath every now and then for the sake of cleanliness. If you can't avoid the direct rays of the sun, the next best thing is to wear a hat or head covering of some kind. He's figured out that there are 10 million people whose skin burn and peel and just never tan. They're the people who should give up sunbathing. Long hours of exposure to the direct sun are dangerous to anyone, but the thin-skinned person is asking for double trouble. The things you eat can have something to do with the way the weather treats you in the summertime, too. Calories, Dr. Papp says, are heat units, so the less calories you eat, the less coal you'll be putting on the fire. Finally, the hot weather sufferers who like to cool off with an icy cocktail get their share of advice. Alcohol and sulfa drugs, the doctor says, make you more liable to sunstroke. So if you drink, do it in the shade. And if you ask me, one of the greatest inventions for making life bearable on days like these is that old hot weather standby, the electric fan that I mentioned before. In fact, I have 2 fans in my home and they're turned on almost all the time. Of course, every so often they get hot and begin to make a grinding noise, and then I know it's time to bring out the little can of lubricating oil and give them a treatment. Just 2 or 3 drops, and they purr so softly I can hardly hear them. Speaking of great inventions, I wonder who thought up the first oil can. I mean, the little 10-cent kind that every woman has around the house for taking out squeaks and making household appliances work smoothly. Whoever it was, I think he deserves a medal, and not just because of the electric fan, either. Just think of all the uses of that household lubricating oil. It takes those buzzing noises out of your refrigerator and vacuum cleaner, and it loosens up the lawnmower and takes the squeaks out of doors and makes the children's skates and bicycles run like new again. And it's a godsend for any woman with a sewing machine or an electric washer, or in my case, at least a typewriter. I suppose every one of us has noticed that it's the really worthwhile things that we take for granted. For example, how many of us have ever given a second thought to the comfort that oil brings every day to our lives? Of course, there are thousands of things made from oil, from rouge to raincoats, but that little 10-cent can of household lubricating oil is kind of a symbol. I'd still like to meet the man who invented it. The theme music is my cue to end our friendly transcribed session for and about women. I hope you've enjoyed the program as much as I have enjoyed bringing it to you. Tomorrow is our Style and Beauty Day, so you'll want to be with us then when I'll bring you some of the latest scoops for fall fashions. Until then, this is Carol Adams saying goodbye and inviting you to be with me again tomorrow at this same time.